This show is intended for informational purposes. You should consult your healthcare professional before starting any type of diet or workout program. Welcome to Under 10 Fitness with your host, Drew Smith. Real conversations with real people that really works. Reach your goals faster without the gimmicks. Get ready for a healthy dose of veggies and iron with Under 10 Fitness.
And welcome to Under 10 Fitness. Today we're talking about shoes. Brittany, are you excited?
I like shoes.
This is going to be the episode for the ladies. What are we going to talk about? High heels probably and pumps and...
Well, I don't know.
What
I don't think so.
What types of shoes are out there? Flats?
There's lots of kind of shoes. I'm wearing some sandals right now.
I'm just kidding. Actually, we're going to talk about shoes with a shoe expert, John Anderson, who works at Runner's Roost. It's downtown on Tejon between Kiowa and Bijou. Shoe expert. So, John, welcome into the studio.
Hey, thank you.
Now, do you have a tip? Like, it's a common question for me anyways. I just buy shoes when they probably start falling apart. But when should you really consider buying new shoes?
Yeah, so the average running shoe is built to last 400 miles, which can get, depending on how often you run, anywhere from 9 to 12 months. But I always tell people to listen to your body first. When the shoe, both the structure and the cushion, begins to break down, you'll start to feel aches and pains throughout your body, whether it's shin splints, knee pain, back pain, or more commonly, plantar fasciitis, which is the arch of the foot.
Mm. I'll have to start considering that more, because right now, my way of deciding whether to buy new shoes is how ugly they are. Like, how embarrassed am I to wear this shoe out in public?
Yeah, me too, unfortunately.
Now, John, you've got a story that we're going to dive into. But first, Brittany, I'm really disappointed, and I know you're very sad as well.
Why is that?
Well, about 3 months ago or maybe more, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, headlining news, like all over, celebrity gossip. So Dwayne The Rock Johnson signs his nudity agreement.
I know, right?
For his new show, Ballers.
For Ballers.
And we just finished the second season. At the last episode, what did we see?
Well, we were expecting to see what we didn't see. But what we did see is a nicely bruised side butt.
Side butt, yeah.
You see, expecting something different.
You see more butt in a underwear advertisement. In a magazine. So, yeah, very sad.
So, both Drew and I are very disappointed not seeing Dwayne The Rock Johnson's
If you feel like you're listening to this episode and you're like, these guys just don't have any zest or excitement for life, that's what it is. So, a little disappointed by that.
Do you watch that show, John?
I don't, no. We'll have to check that out.
Yeah, so don't believe in all the hype. There's not much that there. It's a good show, but... oh well, let's move on. I'm gonna store that in my heart there for a little bit, and I'll get over it eventually. But John, have you always been a runner, or when did you get into running?
Got into running in high school. Was actually a cross country runner and track, and then for a short while, or actually most of my childhood, I was a wrestler and swimmer. But when I got into high school, I tried to do both, but quickly found out I was more of a runner.
All right. And you continue to run for quite a long time then?
Yeah. I ran through college. And then after college, I went into the Army. Tried to run during that time. Well, actually, I did run. Was a member of the All-Army cross-country team. And then was a member of the Fort Carson Army 10-mile team while I was active duty.
And did you pay attention to your shoes during that time, or is this a recent thing where you've really gotten into that?
No, I've always paid attention to my shoes. Back then, I'd buy new shoes every 2 months, just because that's how frequent I was running and breaking them down. It was time for a new pair.
And where did you do most of your running? Where were you stationed, and was that all over the world? Were you on a treadmill?
No, that was stationed here since 2010. I got out of the Army in 2014. Deployed twice to Iraq and Afghanistan and ran over there. When I ran the military world championships for cross country, it was in Belgium.
And we do have some listeners across the pond and all over the world. So if you're wondering where here is, that's Colorado Springs. Now, you, over time, had some problems that came up with running. Could you take us through that story?
Yeah, sure. Back in 2010, when I was deployed to Iraq, basically just was overtraining. I was working out twice a day. Once was a running workout, and the second one was a weightlifting. Probably most of it was CrossFit related. And then just going out on patrols and just wasn't giving us enough recovery time, and slowly getting an ache in my right lower leg. I was, thought it was Achilles tendonitis, and then took the most common approach that, hey, I'll just train through this and I'll ignore the pain. It'll eventually go away. And it didn't. It kept getting worse and worse.
And so eventually what happened?
So it took me close to 4 years to get a proper diagnosis. But I went to see Dr. Grove Higgins at Colorado Springs Human Performance Rehabilitation. And I took him my most recent MRI and X-ray imagery. And within 10 seconds, he saw what was called a Haglund's deformity, a bone spur that was on the back of my calcaneus, or the back of my heel, which was pushing into my Achilles tendon and my calcaneus bursa, causing inflammation.
Interesting. So how do you develop something like that?
There's a couple of different ways. And the one I understand is just if you have high arches, you're more prone to it. Doesn't mean that you can't get it without high arches, but... And then just constant rubbing, I think, was more common for me because of my military boots. So when my foot got swollen and I just didn't pay attention and take the proper recovery time, it just kept rubbing on that area, which allowed the bone spur to grow.
And could you describe, like, what that is? Is that calcium buildup? Is that is that?
Bone spur is calcium buildup, yeah, which would the body usually do if it feels like there's a certain pressure into an area to prevent a break. The body just deposits a ton of calcium in that area to reinforce it.
Interesting. So your body's here thinking that it's doing something good, right? It's trying to protect itself, but overall it's ending up harming you.
Yeah.
Ultimately.
I think someone explained to me very well, as they said, that the body is in survivor mode. It may not be functional for you and what you're trying to do, but it's just trying to make sure it doesn't break. So that's what it was doing.
Interesting.
I wonder how you would avoid something like this. So it sounds like the rubbing was the main problem.
In my case, yeah, for sure. The way my boots were fit. But then when you walk on your toes, I'm a midfoot strike runner. So when I was doing that, I was putting more pressure on my Achilles in that area, which caused the inflammation.
Now, you work at the Runner's Roost.
Yes.
And I think it's the Runner's Roost that really takes care of their customers, learning how they walk, their gait, what kind of strike they have. Where did you learn all of that?
We were just all taught by the owners, Gary and Linda Staines.
Okay.
They've been in the running industry for 20-plus years. And they really, you know, if you go to a normal running store, or if you go to a running specialty store, they usually do some kind of gait analysis with you. Most people will put you on a treadmill and then have it videotaped and record it. The only reason we don't use a treadmill is that the majority of runners here in Colorado don't run on the treadmill. They get out and they're on the sidewalk or the bicycle trails or up in the mountains, and your gait is going to be a lot different.
Interesting.
But the gait analysis is we take a look at everything from your ankles all the way to your hips to see what's going on. You know, if you supinate, which means you walk on the outside of your feet, or if you pronate, which means your ankles and your arches collapse inward.
Okay.
So that's all taken into consideration. And then with that, we take a look at your foot shape, arch height, foot width. And then we bring some shoes we'd recommend. We have you come up, try them on. We go outside, watch you run with them, make sure it's a good fit, something that's comfortable for you.
So let's say I have a supinated strike.
Yep.
And so will you fit me into shoes that have more cushion on like on the inside or the outside of the shoe?
Yeah, for the most part. Unfortunately, I don't make shoes to correct supination.
Okay.
There's certain tactics that we'll take or certain shoes we'll use. I think the biggest... misconception that we see people come in the store is they think, I roll my ankles, I need a lot of structure and stability, which can actually do more damage. You can actually be overcorrected. So if you have too much arch support or something else inside on the inside of the shoe, we call it the posting. If there's a real thick, dense piece of foam or plastic that prevents you from rolling in. And if you supinate and you're in that shoe, it's just going to push you out even more. So you'll supinate, worst degree, and it can cause IT band pain or anterior shin splints.
Oh, okay. I know I had another question.
That's all right. I'll pick it up here. I'll help out a little bit. So is there a perfect shoes or a one-size-fits-all for everybody?
No, absolutely not. It's all, like, shoes are built for your gait. And then, unfortunately, you'll see that if you open up Runner's World or you just go online, you'll see so many shoe reviews telling people how much they love it. But that doesn't mean necessarily it's going to work for you. And that's why we always encourage people to come down and try the shoes on and actually get a proper fit for it.
It's amazing because I knew you were coming on the show, so I thought about my experience with shoes. And that's nothing that I've ever done, and I would never brag about that. But going back into my history, you know, I remember going shoe shopping with my mom, and it only needed to meet one criteria, and that was that her big mom thumb wouldn't be able to just crush all of my toes. There had to be some room in the front. That's the only criteria when it came to shoes.
So it's actually, I mean, we don't call it the big mom thumb rule, but we actually do make sure that's a part of the fitting.
So is that what is the, I guess, optimal spacing that you should have in there? So what are you looking for when you're mushing your thumb down there?
We do a thumb's width. So if you take your toes, and you should be able to lie your thumb perpendicular with the last toes. And then it should be just enough room between that and the end of the shoe. Mm-hmm. The reason we do that is to make sure that when you're running or if you're hiking, you're walking on your feet all day, your foot is going to swell under impact.
Mm-hmm.
So we need room for that expansion so that your feet don't go numb. You don't get black toenails or rip your toenails off.
Oh, okay.
So there needs to be a little bit of wiggle room in there. That's interesting.
Yeah, but you want to find that happy medium because some people don't like that much room and it feels uncomfortable to them. Or in worst case scenario, the heel starts slipping out the back. That's what we want to make sure is that we have a thumb's width, but your heel and the rest of the foot is not slipping or sliding inside the shoe.
Okay.
And does that is that also come into play with how tight you need to lace your shoes?
It can. We don't want your foot to fall asleep. That's always the goal. Your foot should have plenty of circulation. So we want to tie it, just normal.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to cinch it down so tight that happens. There are a couple different lacing techniques that we'll use if someone, has that perfect length, but their heel slips a little bit. We'll do something called a heel lock to put a little more pressure on the front of the ankle or the talus, and that usually fixes it.
Hmm.
Now, what about shoe cushioning? I don't know what that's called. I guess the sole of the shoe.
Yeah.
Is there a better way to shop for that? Do you want a thin sole? Do you want a thick one? Do you want it to be really hard and rigid? Do you want it to be flexible?
It really comes down to personal preference. I mean, the most cushioned shoes out there right now is going to be something like the Hoka, which is almost 2 to 3 inches of foam underneath your foot.
Oh, wow.
Or there's something called the Adidas Boost Foam, which is actually it was a military project one time. They were going to put it behind the Kevlar vest, and the whole object or the point of the foam was when an object hits it, the foam returns 50% of the energy to push the object back.
Mm.
The military decided not to go with it, so Adidas bought it, thinking that when you run, it eliminates the impact by pushing 50% of that energy back to the ground.
Hmm. Like a trampoline.
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
Put some springs on the bottom of your feet. That's all you need. Because I'm interested, because I went and I was looking at new shoes to go hiking in. And I bought some expensive, fancy shoes with a very firm base. They didn't have any flexibility at all. And I've always worn tennis shoes, and my feet really hurt after wearing those. Was that because my foot wasn't able to move as much as it would like?
It could be. I know the common thought with there when you buy hiking boots is that you want to be very stiff so that you don't roll your ankle. But me personally, I like having mobility and flexibility in a shoe. If I put something very stiff on, my ankle locks up and I'm in more pain. When I go hiking, the 14ers around here in the mountains, I'll just take a pair of running shoes, with a trail runner, so I can get a little bit of traction. When it comes down to cushion, I'll return to that. Some people don't like super cushion. Your central nervous system, some runners or walkers like to have that sensory input and know what's underneath their foot. And what they look for is something called a responsive shoe. Which Mizuno is pretty good at making. And you just feel what's underneath you. It's a little bit of cushion to protect the foot from impact, but it's still going to let you know what's going on underneath your foot so you have a sense of your surroundings.
Hmm.
So should everybody take a look at their shoes, even if they're not a runner? Because me and Brittany, we're not radio podcast hosts by our trade. I mean, we do a lot of other stuff, and we're mostly on our feet for long periods of time. Should we spend a little bit of energy and effort looking into some shoes?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's probably close to 30 or 40% of our customer base comes in shopping not for running.
Mm.
We get a lot of teachers, doctors, nurses.
Mm.
People just want to come in to get something comfortable because they're on their feet all day. And you're just, it's not as much impact as walking compared to running, but you are likely to get certain injuries like plantar fasciitis, lower back pain. It's things that can be corrected with a proper fit.
So I'm going to turn to the gym now because yeah. Drew and I are gym rats. Uh-huh. I'm not a runner. I used to be a runner, but I'm not anymore. And I find myself taking off my shoes pretty much 100% of the time when I'm in the gym. I'm not sure that other gym rats are so keen on me doing that, but I wanted to ask the question, if you know, what are some good shoe options or some good options for more of a barefoot type of, I guess, minimalist experience just
yeah.
in the gym?
Well, minimalist shoe is really going to be good for that weightlifting. You want a flat bottom shoe or something close to what we call a zero drop shoe,
mm-hmm.
Because that gives you more stability in terms of your balance when you're out there lifting, when you're doing squats, lunges, all that. And being in a more traditional running shoe, we'll talk about the heel to toe differential is a term we use, and it talks about the difference in height between the heel and the forefoot of the shoe. And when running shoes were first coming out in the 70s and 80s, in the early 70s, Chuck Taylor, the All-Stars, were probably the most common running shoe out there. It's like my dad always brags about. That's how everyone got shin splints. And then more commonly,
yep.
they started getting Achilles tendonitis.
Yep.
So in order to prevent that, they put a higher heel-to-toe differential to prevent the Achilles from having to stretch as much when the heel strike or your heel touches the ground. But that higher heel-to-toe differential will throw you off balance-wise when you're in the gym. So we always go that minimal approach, and you're looking for something between 0 and 4 millimeters to help you get more of that level feeling. Some shoes out there that we carry, the Ultra is a company. All of their shoes are zero drop.
Mm-hmm.
The Brooks Pure line, specifically the Brooks Pure Flow, is a good one to take to the gym. There's a couple others out there. Those are the two off the top of my head. And those
cool.
are the shoes that we usually go to. We have a lot of people come in from Fort Carson. And they're diverse in their workout because either sometimes their unit's going to be running or they're going to be running to a location and they're going to do some kind of circuit training, which involve, you know, sprints, squat, air squat, and push-ups. They want to be able to have that versatile shoe.
Hmm.
Do you have any experience with those toe shoes?
The five fingers?
Yes.
Yeah. I was never a big fan of that. And more recently, they've had a class action lawsuit against them. So they've kind of took a hit. And they've lost some popularity in them. Honestly, because they, you know, when they came out, they made a statement that says we will help prevent injury. But not necessarily true. And unfortunately, people went and got that minimal style shoe and not understanding that their body would need time to adjust to that because they were, you know, coming from something completely different with a lot of structure, a lot of cushion. So their body went into shock, and that's why we get injuries. It's your body's trying to tell you, hey, this is not working out. We need to adjust or slow down.
So that kind of goes back to what I was talking about. When I put too much cushion, it hurt my feet. So it can go the opposite way, too. When
yes.
you have a lot of cushion and you're going to no cushion, is there a way to transition into that?
Yeah, there is. We always recommend the crawl, walk, run approach. So take your current running shoes. And if you're in something, some of the more common running shoes out there right now is the Brooks Ghost, the ASICS Cumulus. They're the real popular ones. If you're in something like that, that's a high heel-to-toe differential, usually between 10 and 12 millimeters, and there's a good amount of cushion. It's not a high-end cushion shoe, but it's a good amount. You can wear that until it's completely shot, and then you start to feel like the cushion's gone. You start to get plantar fasciitis. You know, play around with it. Maybe start letting your feet adjust to it. And when you think you're ready, go down to a 4 millimeter drop shoe.
Okay.
So something like we talked about before, whether it be the Brooks Pure Flow, the Saucony Kinvara is another one. And that is going to shift the angle of your foot under impact and help you in transition. Something else you can do is a bunch of foot exercises out there. We just did a clinic with Colorado Springs Human Performance Rehabilitation where it was called Super Feet. And there's actually, if you go on HPR's Facebook page, you can go ahead and see the video, and there's a ton of exercises. One of my favorite ones was just walking, and it was 6 exercises. You just walk 10 meters. One was on your toes, on your heels, outside of your foot, on the inside of your feet. That will just help those muscles in your feet develop and get stronger so that you can eventually get to a more minimal style if that's what your goal is.
And it was, these are really easy exercises, and they're not, I mean, I hesitate to almost call them exercises because they're so easy that you can do them multiple times throughout the day. And yeah, we share that on the Under 10 Fitness Facebook page as well. It's about 15 minutes long, and it's something that you can do to warm up your feet and just get connected to the earth again. Now, Brittany, growing up, you actually grew up on the reservation. Do you have any experience with you know, what it when it comes to footwear and a philosophy about that?
I just remember all of the older generation and population complaining about how they can't wear moccasins anymore because, or how they wish that they were still wearing moccasins because then they could feel the earth beneath their feet. And a lot of the older generation blamed a lot of their back problems and whatever they had going on the fact that they couldn't actually like grip the earth with their toes. So I know a lot of people still take the approach today of bringing up their kids wearing either minimalist types of shoes or moccasins, just to develop that strong foot type of core.
Yeah, I think shoes definitely disconnect. I mean, some of the best runners in the world come from countries where they run barefoot.
Yeah.
But they're not running on concrete, they're running on dirt. So it's
right.
There's a little difference there. So what I understand is that it's hard to live in the United States and on the concrete and asphalt and, you know, not have any type of protection
right.
there, because then there's other problems that come into play as mm-hmm. well. Mm-hmm. So do you see a difference between men and women when they're coming in to look at shoes? Because women, they wear so many different types of shoes, and guys, we pretty much wear the same shoe all the time.
Yeah, I mean, the fit process is no different between men and women. Some people just come in, they're worried about the color. You know, I want a shoe that looks good and something that matches all my outfits. And I can understand that, but at the same time, in the story, we always try to explain fit and function over fashion.
Mm-hmm.
Because unfortunately, having the right color won't prevent an injury.
Actually, they did a study on T-shirt color, and they had guys and girls wear different color shirts, and it did not improve their running time. So.
No.
It's pretty funny, though. Because, yeah, that's something that I definitely will look at, and that might be my first buying decision is, will I wear that shoe? Yeah, when that comes down to it. Now, are there any common questions, misconceptions that you get all the time that you can think of?
The biggest one is usually, like I said, it's people walk in and they say, hey, I need a high-end cushion shoe, mm-hmm. or I need structure and stability. Mm-hmm. I know I just like having that. Not understanding that shoes aren't made to be one size fits all.
Mm.
People need to get that proper fit. Or like we kind of touched on, you know, I want to be more minimalist. So I want to get back to less of a shoe. You know, take the time and work into it. Don't just jump into it right away. It's a quick way to get injured.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think a minimalist shoe would be a good idea because then you have, a less proprioceptively enriched environment, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you've got less things that could go wrong. It's like walking on stilts, you know? You're if something happens, you're going to fall a long way. So I think being able to be closer to the ground might be a good way to go, but I mean, I'm not an expert on that, but that's how I feel about the situation.
Yeah, I think it really depends on what your goals are. From my experience, the vast majority of people come in don't want to be in a minimalist style. They mm-hmm. They don't want to take the time to work the way down to that. You know, they spend an hour a day working out and that's it. And they want to spend 59 minutes of that running. And then the other minute is stretching or sitting down and catching their breath again. So it's just, you know, it's the lesser of two evils for them.
So it really just depends on everybody's goals, and everybody's going to have a different preference and a different type of foot. But really the best thing is probably to speak to a professional. If you're experiencing any sort of body aches or foot aches, and maybe look at your shoes and see about getting fitted into a proper shoe for you.
Yeah, absolutely. We always want people to come in. I think another misconception is that people say, I'm not that serious of a runner. I don't need to spend, you know, on average, our shoes are $120. We have some higher and some lower, and people think, I don't run a 220 marathon, or I don't run a 7-minute mile, so I don't need to spend that much on my shoe. But that's not what the shoes are made for. They're made for the average runner. They're made for everybody to get out there and just have something comfortable while they're running and keep them healthy.
Right, because you're worth a lot more than $120.
Yes.
Yeah, it's hard to compete with some of those stores where you're looking at shoe prices and, you know, they're a serious markdown and they're like $32 is probably what I usually spend on a pair of shoes. So, you know, to go four times up, that's a pretty big jump. However, you got to think about the other long-term consequences of that. So to spend a little extra money is probably a good thing.
Yeah, and I would look to see how long that, you know, $30 shoe you're getting.
6 months, yeah.
Yeah, so if that. So I had a buddy, I was a serious runner, my teammate in college. He was running 100-mile weeks, and he's just going through his shoes once a month. And he was like, This is crazy, I'm just going to buy something cheap from Walmart, you know, and the entire team told us it was a bad idea. And he went and did it, and it lasted him a week, and it fell apart that quick because how many miles he was putting on it. So usually the durability, how long the shoe will last, is that's why it costs the money. And then the shoes we have, they're the standard MSRP price, so you know, you're going to get it almost anywhere the same price unless it's last year's model. That's when it goes down and gets reduced in price. So you might as well go to a running specialty shop and actually get a proper fitting so you get more for your money.
Nice.
Yeah, and I mean, they sound like they last a long time, and since I'm not a runner, I can use these shoes for up to a year or longer, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at least for running, then it's, you know, everyone, all the runners I know, they'll take their shoes, and even though it might be retired from running, it's still something they wear throughout the day, or as their walking shoes, or their new gym shoe, or...
You know, mow the lawn shoes.
Yeah, but that high impact of running, it's something not worth to do once the cushioning starts to break down.
Yeah. Well, is there anything else that you want to add about shoes that you think people would find important?
We covered a lot of it. Yeah.
Cool. All right.
Color.
And now,
you got to buy the right color to match everything.
Sure.
I'm just kidding.
I think like black or gray or, those are good colors.
Like a
those
neutral
are like
color
neutral.
Usually goes pretty good, yeah.
Yeah. Maybe not even black. That might be a little too much of a contrast. I like gray shoes personally.
Yeah.
It goes with pretty much everything.
So if we could, I'd like to talk about your personal story. So you said that you had some problems. How is everything going now? Did you get that bone spur taken care of?
Yeah, so that injury started in 2010. And up until 2014, when I was still in the Army, all the Army medical care system kept telling me it was just Achilles tendonitis. And so I spent the longest time doing the recovery, taking time off, trying to work on biomechanics and glute activation. Nothing was working. So when I got out of the Army and I got into the VA, I asked for a new set of imagery with MRI and x-rays, and they gave it to me. And then I started going outside the VA system to get a second opinion. And that's when I met Dr. Grove Higgins and Pat Marks at Colorado Springs Human Performance Rehabilitation. And they were the first ones to identify, hey, this is Hagelin's deformity, and it doesn't matter how much glute activation you do, you're going to be in pain until you get that bone spur cut out. We tried a non-surgery or orthopedic route for close to a year, adjusting my biomechanics and doing different drills and exercises, but you know, I couldn't get over the pain myself. So that's when I eventually went with surgery to have the bone spur cut out and removed. And that was 13 months ago. So that was August 2015. I went to Stedman Hawkins Orthopedic Center up in Denver. And had the doc, Dr. Metzl was my surgeon. And he went in on my right ankle and made an incision on the outside, pushed the Achilles tendon out of the way. So we didn't have to detach it, just push it out of the way. He shaved the bone spur. And then he put a bolt, one that's supposed to decompose over time, but he put a bolt through my Achilles tendon and reattached it to the calcaneus bursa. And I've read a couple other people's blogs and reports on Hagel's deformity and common surgeries. There's debate on whether or not you should put a bolt through the Achilles tendon. I know there's a couple doctors in Europe that do not. I didn't know about this till after my surgery, but I asked my doctor, and he was pretty pretty certain that's what he wanted to do, and he doesn't ever not put a bolt through the Achilles tendon because he doesn't want that space between the tendon and the calcaneus. Having too much space there can lead to injury was his opinion.
Okay.
But that's been my biggest hurdle is getting over that bolt because, you know, even though they didn't have to detach the Achilles tendon, it did suffer some blunt damage or trauma putting it there. So now I've It's been 13 months. I started trying to run at 6 months after the surgery. It didn't work out so well for me. I was still, I don't know if it was a strength issue, mobility issue, but I started to feel like I was about to pull my right hamstring, which is not pleasant for anybody, and it's not very common for distance runners to get hamstring injuries. So I knew something was wrong. Took some time off, came back, or not took some time off, stepped away from running and went back to focused on strength and mobility in the ankles and my Achilles tendon. Now started just this week running again, and I don't feel like I'm in any more threat. I just don't, after 10 minutes, I'm still building my tolerance to that. I have a lot of buddies tell me, like, I don't know how you're dealing with this injury. Like, how you've been so patient with it. And I would have just dealt with the pain and run through it. But when you've been injured for 6 years, you learn that patience really is a virtue. And I want to get back to enjoying running and just, not hating it and dealing with the pain. I want to get back to where it was before this injury, where it was fun. So that's why it's been so important to me to focus on mobility and strength now, and realizing that running is three-dimension. You can't just go out there and run. I mean, it's part of it, but you have to do, the mobility stuff before and after, and then you have to ice it or eat properly to be a total athlete. And it's, not just so you can compete at a high level, but just so you can be happy and run for a long period of your life, not just a short time, and have to eventually retire to the couch or the bike, find something else.
Absolutely.
That's a good philosophy. Absolutely. That's how we live on this show.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's what Drew and I are doing as well. We both took a step back from powerlifting for the same reasons. So just focusing on strength and mobility so that we can enjoy it.
We haven't had any injuries
for the rest of our lives. Yeah. Yeah. Well, actually, I don't know. I'm still struggling with this this pelvic tilt thing, but it's always something, isn't it?
Fortunately, we haven't had any, injuries that require surgery or that have really built up over time. So hopefully we can stay mobile. But now I think that, thank you for sharing that. So you also have a blog, or is that right? Did I see that? Share that information.
So as soon as I found out I was going to have surgery, I decided to start a blog. It's called redlegrunners.com. And I just started with the intentions of I was going to document the surgery and my recovery process. I wanted to be a little more than just, my physical therapy. So I talk about the mental side of it, how I overcome the setbacks. If you have a bad workout one day, well, hey, this is, how you got to adjust it and realize it might be one step back, but then you're two steps forward a couple of days. So always staying positive. My morning routines, how I get ready for my workouts and the rest of my day, my diet, my workouts that I do outside of running to help me stay in shape. And now that I'm getting back into running, I want to keep it. So it's been mostly about Hagelin's deformity, but now it's going back into just running in general or athletics in general.
And so you share that on redlegrunner.com. So
redlegrunners.
Redlegrunners.com. That's cool. Yeah, so I found you and I followed you on. You have an Instagram and a Twitter as well.
Yes, yeah, and a YouTube channel.
All right.
Cool.
Yeah, so you share some cool exercises and things that you're actually doing to get back on the running.
Yeah, I do. Almost all the workouts we do out there with Pat Marks. We usually take some time and just make a video of the mobility exercises we're doing. For me, it's all ankle is where I lack mobility because I've been a midfoot striker for my entire life. And just by accident, I didn't realize that was supposed to make you faster, eliminate impact. I was just, as a kid, I was always made fun of because I was running on my toes. Over time, if you're a midfoot striker, that's always going to be a threat. You're putting a lot of tension on your Achilles or your calves, or you're jamming up that ankle. That's something Grove always tells me with runners he sees.
So let's go to the gym. Let's think about the last week we've had or the last couple days. What's been one of your favorite exercises, Brittany?
Me? Okay, so my workout or my movement of the week is something that I'm sure a lot of people do, but for some reason I think that I invented it. It's a Bosu ball squat. I mean, I'm sure lots of people do squats on a Bosu ball, but I loved it. So a Bosu ball is one of those. It's like one of those big like yoga balls, like the one of those big rubber balls, but it's cut in half and then it's like glued or something onto like a flat plank. I'm sure if you've gone to any gym or if you've seen any sort of workout video, you've seen these BOSU balls. So you stand on the plank part and the ball is on the floor. And I was just doing squats, just bodyweight squats on this ball, and it really challenged my ankle mobility, actually. I noticed my ankles were really, really fired up during that process, as well as keeping my hips in line and everything in line. So that is my movement of the week.
A BOSU ball squat. And you BOSU played with stance? Squat. Did you do close stance?
I did.
Wide
I played with stance. I went as close as I could. That was still probably just barely hip width apart. So I'll play around with getting even more narrow with that stance as time progresses. So how about you, John?
So more recently I began into something called a foot pool. Really infatuated with it because there's a lot of debate out there for runners whether or not you should be a midfoot striker or a heel foot striker and how that eliminates impact. But I think the majority of injuries are not caused simply by your feet, but what's going on with your hips, right? So if you're whether you're heel striking or you're midfoot striking, a lot of times in the store when I'm watching people try their shoes, there's no pull in their glutes, their hamstrings, and their quads. Everything's just bouncing off their toes. So you know that heel strikes, they're just pushing off with their foot. So something called a foot pull is pretty easy. You just stand straight up. You can just a couple different variations. You can stand straight up, lean into a wall, have a partner lean, and you're just working on a drill where you pull one leg up, straight up until your knee is level with your hips. Mm. And the whole thing is you want that foot to come off the ground an entire time. If you just let the transition, a lot of people will push off with their foot to get that leg moving. You don't want that. You want to feel it all in that hamstring, glute, and quads, and a little bit of hip flexor. Just pull straight up. I've been playing around with that in the pool too. So with my injury, I've been cross training, whether it's cycling or hanging out in the pool. So I'll do it in the water for more resistance. And you can tell right away when you're running in a pool if you're using too much of your feet and you're pushing off with your foot. You bounce very heavy, and instead of going forward, you're just kind of running in place, bouncing up and down.
Okay. Cool.
Interesting. And you show videos of that on your blog too, right?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, so if you want to check that out, what would be the best to find that video? YouTube or the blog or Instagram?
I think it's on my Instagram right now, which is JD_Anderson41.
Awesome. And then my movement of the week has been a shin box, and you've probably done these. Everybody's probably done these here in the room. And you sit on the ground, basically, and you rock your knees left and right. Now, it's a little more complicated than that, but it really helps open up the hips. And just to make it easy, if you really want to see what that is, you can either look it up on YouTube or you can go to our Facebook page. Just look for Under 10 Fitness, and that's 10, T-E-N, all spelled out. And it's just been a really great move that I've been incorporating every single day, and it just really helps alleviate lower back pain for me, and it just opens everything up. So every morning I wake up, and I've got a little bit of lower back pain, and I'm just kind of stiff. So, and the best thing about this exercise, you get to sit down. It's so easy. I love sitting, so I might as well sit. But you do really have to focus on keeping your feet flat on the ground, and you don't want them to slide all over the place. So there's obviously some thought that goes into it, but it's been just a phenomenal exercise that I have used to just help my mobility. So we're going to start doing this now, adding a little bit more, real useful tips about our training and movements of the week. So if you tune in every week, you might be able to increase your arsenal of toolbox of exercises that you can do, and we'll be sharing those on our social media everywhere, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Under10Fitness. So, John, thank you very much for coming in and sharing your show now, or your story. Thank you for sharing your story.
Yeah, thank you.
So, again, if anybody wants to come see you, you work at Runner's Roost, so just give us a rundown of that, how people can get in touch with you and come to the store.
Yeah, Runner's Roost, we're located downtown Colorado Springs. The address is 121 North Tejon. That's on the cross street of Kiowa and Bijou. Our phone number is 719-632-2633. We have a website, runnersroostcs.com. We have social media, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all that, runnersroostcs. The CS is for Colorado Springs because there are 7 other runners roosts in the state of Colorado. But we're independently owned. So we share a license name, but we were the first runners roost actually opened up in 1977. We're the first running specialty store in Colorado.
Oh, cool.
So it's kind of cool to be part of that history. It's always been downtown in Colorado Springs.
Take care of your feet. That's the message. Take care of those feet. Mm-hmm. Because everything works from the ground up.
Yes.
Right? Because you said you were having problems in your, was it a hamstring or something? You said you started doing some glute activation and things, and that wasn't helping?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, when my injury started, people told me it was Achilles tendonitis. And they told me it was because I wasn't having enough glute activation. So I did a bunch of hamstring strengthening drills and glute activation. And yeah. I pushed that, it didn't cure it.
Glute activation, it's a big thing in the fitness industry. Those glutes.
I feel like I hear that a lot from people.
Oh, especially in powerlifting. They're like, activate those glutes.
Yeah.
And we lay on the ground and we do some bridges and stuff and fire up the glutes. Yeah.
Some of the biggest and strongest muscles. You got to use them for any movement.
Yeah. Fascinated with the glutes there. So, well, Brittany, I think it's time for us to go sulk a little bit more about the Ballers and Dwayne The Rock Johnson. So we're going to go do that. And this is Under 10 Fitness. Again, I am Drew Smith for John Anderson. Can I change your name, John? Anderson? I'm sorry. John Anderson. Excuse me. I do apologize about that. I don't know why that keeps slipping out there. For John and Brittany, I'm Drew Smith. As always, remember,
stay motivated.
Under 10 Fitness is social. Find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Under 10 Fitness.